Chapter 32. Under an Indian summer sun, 200 prime examples of automotive builder's art sat on the green grass of East Potomac Park and glittered like spangles under a theatrical spotlight. Staged for people who appreciated the timeless beauty and exacting craftsmanship of coach-built automobiles, and those who simply had a love affair with old cars, the annual Capital Concours de Beau Motor Car was primarily a benefit to raise money for child abuse treatment centers around metropolitan Washington. During the weekend the event was held, 50,000 enthusiastic old car buffs swarmed into the park to gaze lovingly at the Duesenbergs, Auburns, Cords, Bugattis, and Packards, products of automakers long since gone. The atmosphere was heavy with nostalgia. The crowds that strolled the exhibit area and admired the immaculate design and flawless detailing could but wonder about an era and lifestyle when the well-to-do ordered a chassis and engine from a factory and then had the body custom-built to their own particular tastes. The younger onlookers dreamed of owning an exotic car someday, while those over the age of 65 fondly recalled seeing them driven through the towns and cities of their youth. The cars were classified by year, body style, and country of origin. Trophies were awarded to the best of their class and plaques to the runners-up. Best of show was the most coveted award. A few of the wealthier owners spent hundreds of thousands of dollars restoring their pride and joy to a level of perfection far beyond the car's original condition on the day it rolled out of the factory. Unlike the more conservatively dressed owners of other cars, Pitt sat in an old-fashioned canvas lawn chair wearing a flowered Hawaiian aloha shirt, white shorts, and sandals. Behind him stood a gleaming, dark blue 1936 Pierce Arrow Berlin, sedan body with a divider window, that was hitched to a 1936 Pierce Arrow Travelodge house trailer painted a matching color. In between answering questions from passers-by about the car and trailer, he had his nose buried in a thick boater's guide to the Sea of Cortez. Occasionally he jotted notes on a long pad of legal notepaper, yellow with blue-ruled lines. None of the islands listed and illustrated in the guide matched the steeply sided slopes of the monolithic outcropping that Jaeger had gleaned out of the Drake Kipu. Only a few showed sheer walls. A number of them inclined sharply from the surrounding water, but instead of rising in the shape of a Chinese hat or a Mexican sombrero, they flattened out into mesas. Giordino, wearing baggy khaki shorts that dropped to just above his knees and a T-shirt advertising Alkali Sam's tequila, approached the Pierce Arrow through the crowd. He was accompanied by Lauren, who looked sensational in a turquoise jumpsuit. She was carrying a picnic basket while Giordino balanced an ice chest on one shoulder. "I hope you're hungry," she said brightly to Pitt. "We bought half ownership in a delicatessen." "What she really means," Giordino sighed as he set the ice chest on the grass, "is we loaded up on enough food to feed a crew of lumberjacks." Pitt rolled forward out of the lawn chair and stared at a sentence printed across Giordino's shirt. "What does that say about Alkali Sam's tequila?" "If your eyes are still open," Giordino recited, "it ain't Alkali Sam's." Pitt laughed and pointed toward the open door of the 62-year-old house trailer. "Why don't we step into my mobile palace and get out of the sun?" Giordino hoisted the ice chest, carried it inside, and set it on a kitchen counter. Lauren followed and began spreading the contents of the picnic basket across the table of a booth that could be made into a bed. "For something built during the Depression," she said, gazing at the wooden interior with leaded glass windows in the cupboards, "it looks surprisingly modern." "Pierce Arrow was ahead of its time," Pitt explained. They went into the travel trailer business to supplement dwindling profits from the sales of their cars. After 2 years, they quit. The depression killed them. They manufactured 3 models, one longer and one shorter than this one. Except for updating the stove and the refrigerator, I restored it to original condition. "I've got Corona, Coors, or Sherlin," said Giordino. "Name your poison." "What kind of beer is Sherlin?" asked Lauren. "Domaine Sherlin Extra Dry is a brand name for a bubbly. I bought it in Elephant Butte." "A champagne from where?"
"New Mexico," Pitt answered.
"An excellent sparkling wine.
Al and I stumbled onto the winery during a canoe trip down the Rio Grande."
"Okay." Lauren smiled, holding up a flute-stemmed glass. "Fill it up." Pitt smiled and nodded at the glass.
"You cheated. You came prepared."
"I've hung around you long enough to know your solemn secret." She fetched a second glass and passed it to him. "For a price I won't tell the world, the big dauntless daredevil of the dismal depths prefers champagne over beer."
"I drink them both," Pitt protested.
"If she tells the boys down at the local saloon," said Giordino in a serious tone, "you'll be laughed out of town."
"What is it going to cost me?" Pitt asked, acting subdued.
Lauren gave him a very sexy look indeed.
"We'll negotiate that little matter later tonight."
Giordino nodded at the open Sea of Cortez boating book.
"Find any likely prospects?"
"Out of nearly 100 islands in and around the Gulf that rise at least 50 meters above the sea, I've narrowed it down to 2 probables and 4 possibles. The rest don't fit the geological pattern."
"All in the northern end?"
Pitt nodded. "I didn't consider any below the 28th parallel."
"Can I see where you're going to search?" asked Lauren.
As she laid out a variety of cold cuts, cheeses, smoked fish, a loaf of sourdough bread, coleslaw, and down-home potato salad. Pitt walked to a closet, pulled out a long roll of paper, and spread it on the kitchen counter.
"An enhanced picture of the Gulf. I've circled the islands that come closest to matching Jaeger's translation of the quipu."
Lauren and Giordino put down their drinks and examined the photo, taken from a geophysical orbiting satellite, that revealed the upper reaches of the Sea of Cortez in astonishing detail. Pitt handed Lauren a large magnifying glass.
"The definition is unbelievable," said Lauren, peering through the glass at the tiny islands.
"See anything resembling a rock that doesn't look natural?" asked Giordino.
"The enhancement is good, but not that good," answered Pitt.
Lauren hovered over the islands Pitt had circled. Then she looked up at him.
"I assume you intend to make an aerial survey of the most promising sites."
"The next step in the process of elimination."
"By plane?"
"Helicopter."
"Looks to me like a pretty large area to cover by helicopter," said Lauren. "What do you use for a base?"
"An old ferry boat."
"A ferry?" Lauren said, surprised.
"Actually, a car passenger ferry that originally plied San Francisco Bay until 1957. She was later sold and used until 1962 by the Mexicans from Guaymas across the Gulf to Santa Rosalia. Then she was taken out of service. Rudy Gunn chartered her for a song."
"We have the Admiral to thank," Giordino grunted. "He's tighter than the lid on a rusty pickle jar."
1962, Lauren muttered, shaking her head. "That was 36 years ago. She's either a derelict by now or in a museum."
"According to Rudy, she's still used as a workboat," said Pitt, "and has a top deck large enough to accommodate a helicopter. He assures me that she'll make a good platform to launch reconnaissance flights."
"When search operations cease with daylight," Giordino continued to explain, "the ferry will cruise overnight to the next range of islands on Dirk's survey list. This approach will save us a considerable amount of flight time." Lauren handed Pitt a plate and silverware.
"Sounds like you've got everything pretty well under control. What happens when you find what looks like a promising treasure site?" We'll worry about putting together an excavation operation after we study the geology of the island, Pitt answered. Help yourself to the feast, said Lauren. Giordino wasted no time. He began building a sandwich of monumental proportions. You lay out a good spread, lady. Beats slaving over a hot stove, Lauren laughed. What about permits? You can't go running around digging for treasure in Mexico without permission from government authorities. Pitt laid a hefty portion of mortadella on a slice of sourdough bread. Admiral Sandecker thought it best to wait. We don't want to advertise our objective. If word got out that we had a line on the biggest bonanza in history, 1,000 treasure hunters would descend on us like locusts. Mexican officials would throw us out of the country in a mad grab to keep the hoard for their own government. And Congress would give Numa hell for spending American tax dollars on a treasure hunt in another country. No, the quieter, the better. We can't afford to be shot down before we've had half a chance of making the find, said Giordino in an unusual display of seriousness. Lauren was silent while she ladled a spoonful of potato salad onto her plate, then asked, Why don't you have someone on your team as insurance in the event local Mexican officials become suspicious and start asking questions? Pitt looked at her. You mean a public relations expert? No. A bona fide, card-carrying member of the United States Congress. Pitt stared into those sensual, violet eyes. You? Why not? The Speaker of the House has called for a recess next week. My aides can cover for me. I'd love to get out of Washington for a few days and see a piece of Mexico. Frankly, said Giordino, I think it's a stellar concept. He gave Lauren a wink and a toothy smile. Dirk is always more congenial when you're around. Pitt put his arm around Lauren. If something should go wrong, if this thing blows up in our faces while we're in foreign territory and you're along for the ride, the scandal could ruin your political career. She looked across the table at him brazenly. So the voters throw me out on the streets. Then I'd have no choice but to marry you. A fate worse than listening to a presidential speech, said Giordino, but a good idea just the same. Somehow I can't picture us walking down the aisle of the Washington Cathedral, Pitt said thoughtfully, and then setting up housekeeping in some brick townhouse in Georgetown. Lauren had hoped for a different reaction, but she knew that Pitt was no ordinary man. He recalled their first meeting at a lawn party nearly 10 years before, given by some forgotten former Secretary of Environment. There was a magnetism that had drawn her to him. He was not handsome in the movie star sense, but there was a masculine, no-nonsense air about him that awakened a desire she hadn't experienced with other men. He was tall and lean. That helped. As a congresswoman, she had known many wealthy and powerful men, several of them devilishly good-looking. But here was a man who wore the reputation of an adventurer comfortably and cared nothing for power or fame. And rightly so. He was the genuine article. There were no strings attached to their off-and-on 10-year affair. He had known other women. She had known other men. And yet their bond still held firm. Any thought of marriage had seemed remote. Each was already married to his or her job. But the years had mellowed their relationship, and as a woman, Lauren knew her biological clock did not have too many ticks left if she wished to have children. It doesn't have to be like that, she said finally. He sensed her feeling. No, he said affectionately. We can make several major improvements. She gave him a peculiar look. Are you proposing to me? A quiet look deepened his green eyes. Let's just say I was making a suggestion about things to come.